Hello, thank you for joining us today on The Slight Edge Advantage, the show that talks about the little things that you do in your life that make all the difference in the world. Today's guest is Jeff Hoffman. Jeff Hoffman is a pioneer in marketing. He helped create Priceline.com back in the day and was kind of responsible for getting Shatner involved, which was at the time a deal maker right there. It blew them over the top. And since then, he's done nothing but turn everything he's touched into gold. Ubid.com. We actually have a little venture called Pick Cherries recently that we went into. And that's how I kind of had a little bit of a tie to Jeff and leveraged that tie to get him here in studio, which is kind of a bucket list. So thank you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, man.
You know, I've watched you over the years. I have a couple people on my list. You were on that list. Les Brown is another one, if you're listening.
Les is a good friend, so I'll make sure to tell him.
He's got time to come home. All right. Because he was a member of Florida Speakers in the original. He's one of the OGs.
I did not know that.
So we want him to come home. But yeah, so the things that separate us, the things that separate you are, they're not slight. But they started off that way. I mean, how is it that you came across these things that everyone else was doing? You weren't the first one to do marketing, but how did you separate yourself and have such humongous success? And what was like the clues that said, I'm on to something?
So one of them was a massive failure, which is what reset. In fact, I'll just tell you a story. Reset the thinking. So early on at this time, I had this crazy idea that you don't need to go to the mall anymore. You can just buy stuff at home on your computer, using this brand new thing called the internet, which no one had ever heard of. Okay. So we spent some money. We built this site and we launched it. And our target at the time was stay-at-home moms. And I'll tell you where I got that idea. I stopped at the mall to pick up a birthday gift one day. And I was getting out of my car and there was a mom who was unloading stroller, then another stroller, then one kid, then a diaper bag, then going back to get the bottle. I came out of the store with my purchase, and she had just finished unloading all of her kids and all of her strollers. And I'm driving away thinking, that's ridiculous. It took her a half hour just to get out of the car. So our thought was, instead of that hassle of going to the mall, just order that sweater on your computer. But the internet was brand new.
Wow.
So
the original Amazon.
Jeremy, we launched. And obviously, we were too early. But here was the lesson that changed everything, that slight edge. Nobody bought anything. We saw moms go on our website and click around and then leave. So we failed. We didn't sell anything. I had to tell, I put some of my own money, but we had some investors. Tell everybody we failed and we shut it down. But I emailed some of these moms. And I said, I saw you on my website. And if you wouldn't mind 30 seconds, if I could call you, I'm trying to learn something. Most of them will never do that, but some did. And here is a conversation, real conversation. So we're tech people. Everybody I know, right? That's my space. If you're right in sports, everybody you know probably is in sports. And so this woman said to me, I kind of wanted to buy the sweater, but I'm not going to type my credit card into your computer.
Oh.
So she said, this is the quote. So you and your nerd friends can go buy more gadgets. I said, first of all, it's not my computer, right? It's our business. And second, we can't see your credit card number. She said, of course you can. I'm typing it into your website. I said, no, we use RSA 128-bit encryption. And she said, Jeff, whatever your name is, I only speak English.
Right.
And I said, well, I was speaking English. She said, no, you weren't.
You're speaking nerd.
I said, because everybody I know knows what encryption is. But everybody I know is not my customer. It's a stay-at-home mom. So I said, do you know what encryption is? And she said, it's how the Egyptians used to bury their dead. I said, no. And she said, then I don't know. And so that was a huge lesson, right? And so the edge we had was after that, I said, from now on, I will never build another thing until I spend days and days with at-home moms, if it's in their kitchen, wherever I need to be. So our edge in all of our businesses was, while everybody else was building a business at their office, where do you build your business? In your conference room, at your office. I was never in my office.
Right.
I was in the world all the time. So when people came back with a lot of things we built, one of my first big products was the check-in kiosks in airports all over the world. that came up because I was standing in the airport and everybody was complaining how long the line was and I missed the flight. Because I was there, I was asking the ticket agents, why do we have to stand here to get a boarding pass? And she's like, because you can't access the airline system.
Right.
And I was like, wow. What if I created a way that a consumer, a simple English, could talk to it? And she's like, that's not going to happen. So the kiosks were one of my first inventions. But if I wasn't standing in the airport talking
to her. It's experiential yourself. It's almost like Warren Buffett when he talks about he doesn't invest in anything he doesn't understand.
Yes, there you go.
You know what I mean? So you're having these experiences and it occurs to you. Your mind is just built a little different. Right, where you're saying, how could this apply and make life easier for everyone? I mean, it's a very large scale.
True, but it's all about getting out of your office, going and spending time with whoever you thought was going to buy your product, right?
Yeah, I did that before I saw Bradley's dropping okay, bombs, right. By the way. It's not a direct ripoff.
That's funny.
But it's not original either. So that's really a big deal because what that tells you is that you cannot sit in a cocoon, think of an idea, first of all, without the experiences, but also knowing a practical application, because then how are you going to explain it to people, right? You know,
and Jeremy,
build value.
That's what most people are doing. They're in their office designing their idea.
Yeah.
You know what I tell people all the time? Quit being blinded by your own brilliance, right? Because they're blinded by their own brilliance. My idea is incredible. The world will see.
Yes.
They'll all be convinced. Instead of, why don't you just go first and ask the world, is there something I could do for you? That's the edge in all of my businesses. I didn't start here with an idea. I went out into markets. I was out in the world, out of the office all the time, asking people, what is something you wish someone would fix that you would pay for?
So big idea, and I'm ripping off the guy who, Artist Shave guy, all right, Eric, forget his last name.
He says, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Big idea, start small.
Yeah.
I don't do that. Stan Phelps is a speaker up in North Carolina says, if I had three legs, I would jump in with all three legs. I'm an immersion guy. But so I have a big idea and I put all my chips in on it, but I do get out there at least. Yeah. I do say, I think this is good. I think it could be useful. And I'm not going to be in a dark room putting this together in a kind of a detached manner. I'm going to go and tell everyone about it. My right. wife says, I can never keep a secret, but.
The first time that most people realize that their product didn't work was when it didn't work. Because they spent all the money, they built the product, they launched it, and no sales are coming in.
Yeah.
They're like, why is no one buying it? That's what I did the first time.
Right.
And then they're asking people, and they say, because I don't care about this, and you didn't do that. So yes. My point was, why don't you just ask them first? Right. Tell me what you care about. Tell me what you'd pay for. Tell me a problem that bothers you. And I'll pick one of those to build instead of my brilliant idea that I thought up in a vacuum in my office.
So what do you think, though, the risk is? And my last name is spelled to risk, literally. Yeah. So it doesn't apply to me. But I grew up fighting. I was a street kid, martial arts. I getting punched in the face is a hobby. Okay. People's words don't really affect me. But how many people do you think get this brilliant idea, go out and talk to people, and then get told how shitty the idea is? Or how many things that they're missing, and then they go, yeah, you're right, and give up. You know, that's probably a high number.
Well, but that's not the worst problem. The worst problem is the opposite one. That they go out in the world, and everyone says, no thanks, and I see them 2 years later, and they're still trying to do it. And I was like, literally, no one in the world is going to buy this. They've all told you they won't buy it. Why are you spending all your time 2 years later, 3 years later, building a thing that everybody already said they wouldn't buy.
Well, I always
that's
say
the problem I have to battle.
A failure is a natural conclusion.
Right.
But you got to know when. Yeah. There's also the 3 feet from gold. So there's always that dichotomy of when is a good time to stop. You know, when is it
so
ground into the ground? Where is it that I'm not? You really got to point back at yourself every time. The idea might have been great, but I've gone with it so long without ever changing my mind.
That happens a lot, and it's ego.
Ego
that's
is
what
it.
Draws that. It's people's ego is what prevents them from saying, I was just wrong. People ask me, they say, you've done so much stuff in your life. And I tell them, that's because when I failed really fast. Because when I'm wrong,
early
I'm
and
like,
often.
Okay, it was a dumb idea, And by the way, that means you're going to get all the ridicule, all your friends, how'd your great idea go? And you have to say it turned out to be a dumb idea, and they laugh at you.
Yeah.
So just the ego of not wanting to be laughed at or being wrong or telling people prevents people. So I see them go another year, and I know I can make this work. I was like, literally all the data in the world says 3 years from now, you'll be in the same spot, but now you'll be broke, and you'll have no friends left, and you'll still be trying to do something that no one
wants. You know, your idea, your first idea you had there, I mean, it eventually came to fruition just under another, you know, another name and another person did it. But you really, you had the pioneering mind to do that. If you would have stayed with it and internet times would have caught up with you, it would have probably been as big.
Yeah, but, there was no financial way to survive that gap for me at the time. So
when you get to the bottom of a hole, first thing you should do is stop digging.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly. You just summarize our entire conversation.
That's Peter A, by the way. Yeah. I love you, babe.
But people don't stop digging.
Right.
And I have to literally try to take their shovel away. you are right that there are things you'll go out in the world that are so innovative that people don't understand, right? So they may say, no, I don't want that because they haven't seen it yet. There are those cases. But what I'm doing is saying, play the odds. The odds are, you might, to your point, you might be out there and everyone's saying no thanks, and you're like, if I just stick with it, they'll see one day. That might happen, and you might be successful. But out of 100 people that were successful, the other 99 were successful because they built something that people understood and wanted. So that's all I'm saying. Your odds are better if people are saying, yeah, I'd buy that right now. Is it ready?
Well, the beautiful thing is that we do live in a place where we can fail and come back.
Yes.
Over and over and over again. Yep. And very, very rare in this world that we live in. We're blessed. I mean, I always say I'm a billionaire in two ways. Number one, I'm a family billionaire. My family, it doesn't matter where I am in life, I've got that.
Yep.
And I broke a cycle, which I'm proud of.
That's super
very,
important.
Very, 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 you know,
you should be
seldom
very proud of that.
That happens.
Correct.
But the second thing that I'm a billionaire is I was born when I was born and where I was born. You know, we didn't have internet, which means we didn't have evidence of the stuff we did. But then we became into it in our 20s for me. And so we have this benefit. And the sooner we adapted that and further, I think we got in life because of that mindset. So I think when you do fail early and often, as I preach to do, you do have the advantage of getting those calluses built.
Without a doubt.
You know, and then you go, you failed, but at least I tried. Yeah, you know, I'd rather be ridiculed for trying and whiffing over and over and over again than to have a, you know, and God bless the people who are the government job people, the pension people, want to put in their 20. Everyone has a place, but I'd never identify with that. I couldn't, it would be suffocation to me.
Right.
So I'd be worse off going, oh, let me go the safe route, become a teacher and teach for 30 years so I won't be ridiculed. That would hurt my soul worse than someone pointing and laughing, because I go, that punched me in the face and that's fun. What you're saying is just giving me more fuel, really. You know,
it's a DNA thing, right?
It is.
Entrepreneurship.
Yes.
People always say, you get asked this question too. I always get asked the one, are entrepreneurs born or made? And the answer is both. The made part is listening to podcasts like this. When you can learn from people who have gone where you're trying to go. So there's a made part, right? But there's a born part. There's a certain DNA. You were talking about it, the fact that, you know, you tend to go all in on things. You know that saying, being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and trying to build an airplane on the way down, right? If that thrills you, you're an entrepreneur. If it scares you, go somewhere else.
Exactly.
It's not for everybody, and that's okay. We need both types.
We do need both types. So one of the things that I see, the slight edge advantage, and I struggle with this mightily, is describing what makes you different or your product or service. How do you differentiate yourself? What problem do you solve? And how are you different than everyone else trying to solve that problem? How do you come up with these ways that really make you, the people that you help, stick out? Is it just that you've been around so many things and it's the different perspective because we're too close to our own, you know, muck and mire?
I still think in our case and all the companies I've been involved with, a lot of it had to do with what we talked about at the beginning, which is spending way more time in the world and way less time in the office. So I was in tune with markets and customers way more than my competitors were, because they were holed up in their conference room on a whiteboard. And I was sitting with the customer. So who's probably going to get the solution?
Yeah.
That, and what they would do is they would say, Jeff, you don't even have a product. What are you doing? I said, I'm letting the customer design the product that they want. It. You're designing something you think they want, you hope they want. Yeah. Then you're going to bring it to them and be disappointed in your sales. I'm asking the customer to help me design the thing they want, and I'll build it for them.
Yeah, it's almost like the Simon Sinek for his first YouTube video, TEDx, whatever, that was just about the why and reverse engineering and, you know, how Apple did such a great job with that. That's what really you did. You went out there and found out what people need, what was the problem that they had in their life that you could fill, and then you came up with the product or service that filled that.
Right.
Instead of saying, you know, the opposite way is everyone has this problem because I have the problem. You did that too, like with the line.
Right. But that only, you're correct, because that only started me. Do you know what I did that day in the airport? I started walking down the line and asking questions of everybody in that line. I didn't what assume if, because I if. Had, a, right, I did.
Yeah.
I started, I'm stuck in the airport. I missed my flight because the line was so long. So I'm walking down the line asking all these people questions. I don't know if they think I work for the airline or what, but you are correct. You needed to make sure lots of people have this problem.
Yeah. And, you know, even for me with this newest venture that I did, I knew that it was, I knew enough coaches of any, across any border had the same problem. Algorithms always changing. No control over that. All your clients are on social media. Guess what? They're not yours. You get canceled if somebody's making a comment on it. You just lose all your contacts, right? So how can you spend all this money, all this research, all of this time, and then it just changes overnight without an explanation? And so I said, I will find out what they want, but first I'm going to build it so I can show them because they don't know what they want. Right. Otherwise, somebody would have done it, you know? And I did it with money that I could afford to lose also.
Sure, even that's a big difference, right?
It was a lot, and it's probably the last. I said I'm a professional speaker, and I'll be speaking at Walmart if this doesn't work out. Welcome to Walmart. I'll be opening at Walmart. But I'm okay with that. But definitely, I think that what we're doing is building this thing in the air. You know, we did the web app. And because that was the quickest one to market and the easiest to change, now we're doing the app with all these great ideas that have come in, functionalities and different things. So I like that we subscribe to both sides of that. I think you still need
I think that makes sense. Both sides, and you're meeting somewhere in the middle. It's just that most people start all the way at this end, and they don't really, by the time they get to the other end,
they're underground.
They're already too late.
Yeah. And the other thing that I wish I had a better... And tell me if you see more success with this. Somebody doing partnerships. Somebody, people who complement each other's skills and actions and attitudes and all that stuff. I tend to be a loner. I always have. And because of my childhood trauma, I tend to be alone. I have a lot of friends, a lot of great contacts. I'm putting myself around people. That's been the biggest change in my life, is that I only put myself around people who are superstars, both attitude-wise and action-wise and all this stuff. And I am finding it easier to ask for help. Mm-hmm. But do you think, though, that makes a big difference? The slight edge advantage could be find yourself a Robin, you know?
Yeah, I think, of course, it's dependent on the market you're in and a whole bunch of things, but for the most part, the answer is definitely yes, right? Because a lot of times the reason people don't do that is they don't want to share. And they wind up owning 100% of nothing instead of owning a smaller percent because you brought in partners of something huge.
Yeah.
Right. That's the part that people miss.
That's Shark Tank 101, right? Yeah, that's their close, right?
But it happens all the time.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, greed, and that goes with the ego.
Yeah.
You know, like I want a partner, but I think it's too early for a partner because I don't have enough value built up in the company
yet. Okay, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
It might be too early for the partner that you want.
Yes, yeah.
But there might be a point where that partner brings things that you don't, that they're not 1 + 1 = 2, they're 1 + 1 = 5.
Absolutely.
So when that happens, it's
you should know, and that's where the getting around, having enough failures under your belt to go, this is the time to say yes.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, but it's really a great thing to have somebody in here with your perspective. And Stuart Goffman is the person that we have in common. Pictures. He said he met with you 3 hours one day to Miami Airport.
Yep.
He said it was a mastermind. Learned more about marketing those 3 hours in his whole life. And this guy's a producer on A&E and on all these shows and understands markets. But to have you in here and talk about these things, what are you doing now? How do you help people? Where are you finding your juice?
So after being a CEO since I was 24 and building 8 companies, including the failures, I had made a commitment to giving back. And I finally just quit one day and said, there's no fire anymore for building right. another company. I've been doing that my whole life. But I'm really committed to giving back. So the first thing I did, and I told no one at the time, was I decided to do a social experiment for myself. It was a commitment to giving back. I did a year of yes. For 1 year, I will say yes to anybody that asked me for help for an entire year. But I'm not going to tell anyone I'm doing that.
Of course.
But I will see where it goes. I won't make any money. I won't do deals. I won't go to work. I'll just say yes to people for a whole year. That went on for like 6 years. It was so fulfilling. So what that has evolved into now is I'm involved with multiple, pretty much all my times in my nonprofit work. Our biggest one is something we built called the Global Entrepreneurship Network. It's a nonprofit. It's based in Washington, D.C. I'm still the chairman of it. We are on the ground. This is still crazy to me. We're on the ground in 200 countries. And we have a really simple mission statement. We teach people anywhere in the world how to gain freedom and independence through entrepreneurship. So the simple mission is we teach anyone anywhere how to start and scale a business. We're going to teach you how to take care of yourself by turning your idea into a business that makes money. We do that in 200 countries now. In fact, I'm about to head out to about six more countries in the next like 5 weeks teaching entrepreneurship after I leave here. And so that's the big one, again, that we do all over the world. And it's not about money. It's about independence and freedom. We're teaching people how to be free. If they have money, they can be free. The money is what they need, but that's not what they're doing it for.
Well, nobody does. Really, people have a misconception of money. You know, if it was so valuable, you'd never spend it.
Yeah, right.
It's what can I get for the money?
Yeah, right. You know? It's not the money. Yeah,
and so, but people, I met people without money. I was one of those for many, many years. Yep. We think of money so differently, and it keeps us poor. Until you realize what you can do with the money, then the money starts coming. It's really a weird thing. And it's the power of attraction and all that kind of stuff, the universal secrets of attraction. But really, once I got that mindset shift, and I'm so open to these things, because what started this all off when I was 20 was somebody saying seven words to me that had no business changing my life, for the better especially.
Sure.
But I realized that when I took a piece of news that most people would flip out or use it as a bigger crutch because I had victim mentality
right, then it's
in
the
spades.
Big,
but when I did and I saw the good stuff that came from it, that's really when all my life changed overnight, literally overnight. So how do you work with these people around the world who's never had success, never even seen success in a lot of places, to change that mindset of what it means to really be successful? And it's not about the money. Just like some people that make a lot of revenue and no profit, and they think they're successful, and they're not. They're big failures.
Yep.
How do you help with that?
Yeah. So the first phase of this is not business, right? It's not infrastructure. It's not any of those things. It's inspiration. So you're exactly right. The first part, education, is phase two. Inspiration is phase one. I spend a lot of time. One of my favorite nights of my entire life, as crazy as this is going to sound, I was deep in Cambodia. I was in
That's the best start story ever.
I was in the poorest part. I was with a bunch of young Cambodians. Cambodia, at that point, it might still be, was the youngest country in the world. 75% of the population was 28 or below because of the war.
Wow.
They killed all the adults during the big war and the civil war. So it was all these young people wanting to rebuild their country now, post all the, you know, all the famous violence in Cambodia. We are sitting, I'm dressed nicely, but I just sat in the dirt. We're sitting on the banks of a river in the jungle of Cambodia with a whole bunch of young people sitting in a circle. They came to see me speak. And then I left with them in the middle of nowhere. We sat till the sun came up. And, and so that's what it takes.
Yes.
Because you are correct. They didn't know what success was. They don't know what money is. They don't know what's possible. So before we could start and say, let's do a startup, they don't even know what that means.
Right.
You have to get deep enough to know where is their life?
Yeah.
Where do they want to go? What do they care about? Who are they?
Yeah.
What are their skills? It's a lot of digging to find out what the raw, it's clay, right?
Yes.
And then you start molding it. But I got to know what kind of clay this is and what I can mold it into and what they want to be molded into. You have to invest a lot of time. I was speaking at the United Nations, and I got asked, it was a bucket list thing. I got asked to address the UN and on the state of entrepreneurship globally. And I said something based on that experience. I said, in theory, you asked me to address the United Nations because all you world leaders want to help entrepreneurs. And then I paused and I said, except you can't. And everyone's looking at me like, what? You're the speaker on entrepreneurship. I said, unless you do one thing, I'm not sure you're willing to do. And then I paused and I said, you got to get dirty.
Oh, I love it.
And afterwards, I actually made a joke, Jeremy. I said, how many red dots are on my forehead right now?
Oh, yeah.
I was joking. They're going to kill me for saying that, right? But they actually loved it because what I said was, if you don't go sit in the dirt in the village and understand these people's lives, you can't help them. You don't even know who they are.
You're meeting them where they are.
Yeah. So that's, you were so right what you said. You can't just jump in because their starting point is so far from yours that things you think, well, everybody should know that. Everybody knows what encryption is. Yeah,
yes.
No. Yeah, no.
Right back to the beginning.
Right. Not the case.
No, I love that. And it's so wise. It does start with hearts and mind.
Yep.
But also, I have a saying, and it's not mine. Nothing is mine, right? Nothing is anyone's. But Goggins more says it, is that motivation, and Zig Ziglar said it, motivation's like a bath, right? You need one every day.
Yeah.
But when you have drive, when you do understand that why to the level, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th why down, then you develop drive. When you have drive, you don't need motivation anymore. Nothing's going to stop you. The failures don't stop you. The visions don't stop you. The naysayers don't stop you. They actually fuel you. So getting to know these people where they are, showing them that you're willing to sit in the dirt with them, really, I think, helps them be vulnerable in telling you and figuring out themselves what their whys are to create that drive. Because once you're gone, and whoever it is that's going to take your place in that infrastructure is not you. So they're going to need to have it within them.
Exactly. You have to light that fire. You have to light their pilot light.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. And you know, those are some of the coolest experiences of my life, but you don't learn that at a conference. You don't learn that in a meeting. You don't learn that in a survey. You learn that at 3 a.m, sitting in a circle by a river in the middle of nowhere saying, man, let's just leave it all out here and talk about life. And until you get that, takes an investment of time. I mean, right.
Oh yeah.
To get trust. When you get trust, you can get some vulnerability.
Yeah, well, it's authenticity always shines through in what you say, done. And nowadays, I'm telling you, we're so different where we had to trust energy back then. We had to trust people's, where they're coming from. Now, it's documented.
Yep.
You could tell pretty quickly if someone's full of crap.
Yep.
Go online. Whatever they're saying better be documented. So how important is it to document with this little thing we have in our pocket?
Everything, right, the whole world.
I've got about $20,000 worth of cameras facing us right now. And this is better video.
Right.
It's just
pretty amazing.
It's crazy to not to take advantage of that and to put it out there. And it's free to put it out. All these things are free. YouTube is free. The credibility that you get, the things that you can tell people that you've done, just go to my YouTube channel, right? Yeah. Actions speak louder than words. Words are worth a thousand, you know, pictures worth a thousand words, videos worth a million.
Yep.
So right there, you can get much further with somebody much quicker, though.
I completely agree.
Yeah. So the game's changing and it keeps changing for the better. And it's just about taking advantage of it. How can we help you today? What can we do for you?
So I'm, you don't have to do anything, but I appreciate that you ask. And I do have an answer, actually. My heart these days is I created my own youth foundation. It's called World Youth Horizons. I created it because when I would write a check to charity, I never knew where the money went. Mm. And then I was friends with, I'm putting friends in air quotes, an NFL star who had a charity. And I was about to post a picture of me and him. And he wasn't playing well those days. So I wasn't going to say, he's such a great football player. I was going to say he's such a great man because of his charity. And I'm not going to say his name right now. I expect people can figure it out when they Google it. But I found out that they had externally raised $1.4 million from donors. And his wife and her friends had taken 1.1 of it for salaries. And the player knew this. And so I was like, I just can't write checks if I don't have the time. If you have the time to invest, there's plenty of legitimate charities. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, but
I don't have the time to do the research. So I started my own, World Youth Horizons. It's at worldyouthhorizons.com. We, with a really simple mission statement, well, two things. One is we find kids who do not have a shot at a better life, and we give them one. Mm. Usually, by the way, that's education, right? We build schools in some parts of the world, in Africa. We find all the abandoned children around the world and we raise them. We build homes. We raise them in homes. We send them to school. We pay for school. We do this in the U.S. We do this in Africa. Our goal is to give every kid a chance. And part of the reason I created my own is 100% of every donated dollar goes directly to the children. Wow. Because I pay all the expenses and everybody that works with me is a volunteer. Wow. Mm. Or they don't do it. And so we're letting people, when people make a donation, the kids will actually come on video and you can see what they'll show you, the books they bought for school or the clothes you bought them. So we're making sure there's 100% end-to-end accountability for the money. But more importantly, there's a lot of, you said it perfectly. There's a lot of kids that didn't ask to be born poor in an African village,
right?
But they were.
Yeah.
Well, and so we're just going to try to, right in the U.S.
Anywhere. Right?
Yeah. So we're trying to level the playing field.
Right. But at least if they're here, it's almost like less, if you can look up, you can get up. And here you got people with hands out helping you up in Africa and many other places around the world. They're not. And it's, they never even heard of it.
Right. No, you're exactly right.
So that's really unique.
It's funny you say that because I've been in countries where the word charity wasn't a thing. Where I said, why don't you help them? You live here. And they're like, what do you mean help them? They don't even understand the concept. They have their problems. I have mine. I was like, right, but yours don't include food. You can eat. Those people don't have it. And they're like, well, this is my food. I was like, wow, it's not their fault. They just don't even know societally the concept.
Altruism.
Right. They just don't know it. It's not even their fault.
It's a survival, right? I mean, what happens if?
Right.
I have food because of a reason, but it does not guarantee. And
you're right. It's a survival thing, and you can't actually blame them.
Yeah.
They're feeding their family, and they're keeping the rest in case something goes wrong.
Changing their mindset, or they're opening their eyes to it, it's just one of a ripple effect that could happen in any community anywhere.
Big believer in the ripple effect, and it does happen. We see it all over the world now with the work we do, but. People step up and help us sometimes at World Youth, and it's so much appreciated.
Well, I will. It'll be out there. It'll be out there, and I'll continue. It'll be on all of my shows from now on. It'll be on my pages. Firm believer that I don't like the same as you. I have a couple of charities, but I like to give the waitresses a $200 tip on a $20 bill. You know, that kind of thing, where I know, after I'm gone, of course.
Right.
You know. I pay for every police officer, fireman, service member at their tables. Don't tell them I'm doing this.
Yep.
I need to pay for it. You know, that's the kind of ground level charity
that
matters. I like to give.
It absolutely matters.
Yeah. And so something like this, though, sounds like it's just right up our alley. So
thank you very much. And thank you for asking.
Thank you
for being on
this
show. Today. Really, really enjoyed it.
I wish I could keep you for 2 or 3 hours, but I'm not Joe Rogan. Not yet.
He does go a little long.
Not yet.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, this has been a very, very special Slight Edge Advantage. I think it's going to take us from cheeseburger to steak. I really do. I think we're going to get Jeff Hoffman bounce. Put in the comments, what is your Slight Edge Advantage? What are you struggling with? What could you do just a little bit better that could lead to a bigger, brighter tomorrow that could impact people for generations to come? I'm Jeremy Torres. Thank you for watching Slight Edge Advantage. See you soon.